broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for June 17th in the year of our Lord 2020, hour 2 at 2. The goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Man, have we got a lot to cover on the radio today, ladies and gentlemen. A guest coming up. She's kind of like the Michael Jordan of the executive assistant world. We'll tell you about her. Coming up, hang tight. Inflation data shows massive disruptions to U.S. food supply and demand. Kurt, are we all going to starve, buddy?
Well, that all remains to be seen. But I would suggest, ladies and gentlemen, grow a little garden, get a chicken, get some eggs, that kind of stuff. Maybe that'll help on the whole, so-called massive disruptions of the U.S. food supply and demand. You got the truckers who are saying they don't really want to go into these no police zones, Sam.
I wonder why.
Those would be the people.
What's wrong with them truckers? That are, trying to self-preserve and stuff? What are they thinking?
Good point. Yeah, I got you there.
No, I don't blame them, Kurt. I don't blame them one bit. Who in their right mind would want to go in those terrorist zones? Why we allow these terrorist zones to continue in America? I just don't know. I get how, the rioting happens night one, night two, night three, and you're like, hey, we're trying to get a handle on this thing. We don't want to be too heavy-handed, but at the same time, I get it. But you know what? When you're on night like 20 or 30 or 60 or what, at some point, I don't get it anymore, Kurt. By now, you could have literally deputized a bunch of capable people under the direction of the county sheriff in every county in the country that could literally infiltrate those crowds, spot who the bad guys are, arrest them, stop them, take them off the streets. There's so much you could do, and they're doing nothing. They're literally letting statues be yanked down and thrown into rivers and stuff now. They're literally just letting lawless activity go on all around the country. And sadly, I think Donald Trump needs to do more about it, Kurt. You say, well, what can he do? I'd put serious pressure on the mayors and the governors, and I would be calling every sheriff in the nation. I'd be saying, Sheriff, what can we do to help you? This is out of control. Where's your governor? Is he asleep at the wheel? What's going on around here? Because, look, you just can't have that criminal activity run amok night after night after night after night after night after night unchecked. You just can't have that in the greatest country on the face of the earth, Kurt. You just can't. Anyway,
a little more detail on the food pricing and stuff like that.
I pray we don't
starve.
They
say that egg prices have soared 31.8% in April, and then they crashed 44.6% in May. So I don't know about that, Sam.
All right, I guess it's top ramen and spam for me. Hope you got enough of it, people.
Yeah, they say pork prices rose, and then they went down. They went up and they went down. They say prices paid for beef roast jumped 19.5% compared with the prior month, compared to a year ago.
Yeah, Kirk,
roast
can't
prices
even get any
were up
beef 26.9%. There is a shortage. I agree with this.
Well, good point. They say government's producer price index. Boy, that's another thing.
Shut that sucker down. I don't want a producer price
Constitution.
Index.
For beef and veal, prices soared 69% in May after rising 12% in April. So anyway, there's a bunch of that stuff going on.
Yeah, and do you think that the inflation on food is going to be bad enough to really cause problems? And do you believe there's really going to be shortages, Kurt?
If the government will get out of it.
They won't, buddy. Hold on. They won't.
That's true.
And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just saying nobody's making a move to get out of it. There's not even that proposal on the table, except for in circles like with me and you and common sense folks. But it's not really on the national table for discussion at all, Kurt. Although it should be. And, I wish Donald Trump would take this up. But the poor guy got has his arms full of things to do.
Yes, he does.
I mean, I don't know how he's going to get to the food, discussion. Hey, let's abolish the food, whatever, price index, whatever, board kind of thing. I mean, And so I wish it were true, and I think you're right on the point, but do you expect food shortages, Kurt? And my response is this. I expect food shortages in the future, yes. I don't expect them in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
So when they, you well, know, they always say the sky is falling. The economy is melting down. There's food shortages, and it never happens. So we got to be really careful with timing. But no doubt, as we continue to violate the commandments of God, there will be a famine, Kurt.
Like, for example, let's say you're in North Dakota and you have a garden and you got your cow and, you know, that kind of stuff. I bet you don't even really notice.
Until Black Lives Matter comes and steals your cow, buddy.
Good point.
Other than that, your point's well taken there now.
But I think about the last place they're going to head is North Dakota. You know what I mean?
It's one of them.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, our prayers are that we don't have a famine, folks. And the best way we can prevent a famine is to turn to God and repent, and then to get up off our knees after serious, serious repentance and go to work and do our very best to make sure we have food production pipeline happening, right? Let's go back to work, folks, is the point. Mm-hmm. All right. The complex funding and ideology of Black Lives Matter. Kurt wants to dig into this.
We talked a little bit about this yesterday, but there's a little more detail. They got $464 million. This is before now. I think it's up to like $1.5 billion. You know, where you've got these corporations that hope to not be targeted by the Black Lives Matter crowd and the looters. And so they're basically adding up cash, Sam. Basically, it's kind of like the old days. You know, you'd hear of Chicago and the mob, and they'd say, "Hey, man, I think you need fire insurance." And they're like, "Well, I already got fire insurance." Well, I mean, you need a different kind of fire insurance, because if you don't pay us money, then your place is going to catch fire. You know, well, it's same kind of thing, except for it's on a nationwide kind of big thing, don't you think, Sam?
I think so, but I don't understand the complications of the funding, Kurt. Let me explain.
Well,
who do they write checks out to, buddy? Or do they just do cash, or do they like have armored trucks driving around? And, you know, who do they deliver the cash to, Kurt? Well, who's the check made out to and stuff? And if these companies aren't writing checks to people, they're just giving cash, then oftentimes you got money laundering concerns. And, you know, the government has a cow when you deal with more than $10,000 without it being, quote, proper banking procedure. Kurt, they report you right to the IRS and everything else. Is that all happening? And if it's not, and it's legitimately above board and stuff, who are the checks written out to? If you write them out to Black Lives Matter and there's no head of the organization, who cashes the check? Who deposits it? Who has access to that fund? This is very simple. You know, look, they can contact trace me and find out if I've been to Walmart today to make sure I don't spread the coronavirus, but they can't find out where the money's going. Hello, people.
Great point.
Hello.
They say that Airbnb put $500,000 to the Black Lives Matter and the NAACP, and then they say Bad Robot Productions pledged $10 million. They're the guys, the film studio that involved in Star Trek, Star Wars, and Mission Impossible. They pledged $10 million to anti-racist groups, BLM among the first recipients. BTS is a Korean pop group. They pledged $1 million, a matching donation from fans. Cisco, electronics giant, did $5 million to groups including BLM and its own Fighting Racism and Discrimination Fund. That's where I'd put mine, is do it in your own fund. And then you got the DECIEM Cosmetics, never heard of them, but they put $100,000 to NAACP and BLM. Democracy Alliance, another Soros-linked group, added BLM to its annual $500 million donor list. DoorDash, food delivery company, is doing $500,000. Ford Foundation and Borealis Philanthropy, left-wing
now,
groups.
Now, how is this complicated? All you got to do is put the stack of checks in the bank, Kurt.
Yeah, good point. $100 million donor fund. George Soros Open Society Foundation, $33 million. Glossier Cosmetics, I guess that's a little glossier than the other guys, but anyway, that's $500,000 there. Pokemon Company, owners of the popular card game and its characters, $100,000. Scopely.
Those guys are kind of wimpy.
Mobile,
Pokemon. Yeah. Come on. Yeah, you're not even in the millions yet.
Mobile phone game developer, $1 million to BLM, NAACP, and Equal Justice Initiative. Spanx, undergarment manufacturer did $100,000 to groups including BLM. Square Enix computer games $250,000 to BLM, also matching employee donations.
I think Ubisoft the Bureau of Land Management should games, sue the Black Lives Matter people personally.
I agree. Ubisoft computer games $100,000 to MAACP and BLM. The Weeknd, Canadian R&B singer $250,000. Those are some of them, Sam. I guess this Southern Poverty Law Center even shows up in there. They got
darn
some
right.
of the cash, Sam, you know.
But what about the ideology they're backing with all this money, Kurt?
Well, they say the full ideology? BLM agenda. Yeah, well, I think so. They say that we dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts. This is in the BLM agenda, the official BLM agenda. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. We foster a queer-affirming network when we gather. We do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking. Anyway, bottom line is, it's kind of confusing to me, Sam.
Kind of?
That's all.
I don't see why you're confused, buddy. They're all backing the communist, socialist, fascist, hostile, violent, belligerent agenda with no leadership, they claim. How confusing can that be? Liberty Roundtable Live, ladies and gentlemen.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
All right. Happy to have you along, ladies and gentlemen. Liberty Roundtable Live continues. Our special guest now is somebody I've kind of had a little bit of a hard time thinking of how to introduce to you. All right. Her name is Jan Jones, and I thought I'd tell you who she is not. She is not the lady running for office in Georgia, who you probably heard plenty about. Her name is Jan Jones, too. This is a different Jan Jones. And I thought of saying, well, who is she? She's an author. She's a speaker. She's a businesswoman. And I just kind of thought I'd say this. It might be an easy way to explain it. She's kind of like the Michael Jordan of the executive assistant world. She's kind of like the, I don't know what you'd say, the Federal Reserve chairman of the booking agent world. Okay, it's important to understand who she is because it defines what she stands for. Jan Jones, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Good morning, Sam. Thank you for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
Right. Now, you run a... Let's just talk about your history. First off, tell us where you grew up and who you are, just really quick.
Okay. So my family is originally from India. I was born there. I grew up in Sydney, Australia. And then I moved to California, USA. I've married a native San Diegan, a native Californian. And I've lived in California now for most of my life.
And it's a wonderful place, but it's getting kind of rowdy, isn't it?
More than a little, yes.
All right. You have had a unique quest in life, from India to Australia to the United States, and now you run a company, Jan Jones Worldwide, that literally books guests all around the world, primarily Australia being your roots, but also being kind of one of the focus points for your business, right?
Yes, that is correct. So we send business experts and celebrities to speak at events all over the world. And my niche market actually is the international market as opposed to the U.S. Of course, we do work in the U.S., but primarily we work internationally simply because, I'll tell you this, my business started actually before the internet became a thing. And so people in the rest of the world were sometimes a little bit intimidated about doing work with American speakers and American business. And so I was there to hold their hand, and they saw me as an international person, somebody who kind of had a similar background to them and who understood the need of having a foot in each camp, so one in the USA, one internationally. So I was able to bridge the gap culturally. And that's essentially how my business has grown up into this niche business of being able to take American and international expertise all over the world.
And that's hard, folks, because the American market is so different from the world that somebody does need to bridge that gap. And it takes somebody who's kind of lived around the world a little bit to understand how to do that. How does an American CEO or somebody who's a professional in some way or an athlete or a who knows who, how do they bridge to the international world? And it takes a little bit of training and guidance and positioning, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. And one of the things that we focus also is cultural awareness. And we were doing this long before, again, long before it started to be the politically correct thing to do, you know, just being aware of the different social norms and the different cultures. And, you know, like, for example, in the Middle East, not shaking hands with women and things like that, or dressing modestly when you're on stage, things like that, that we've help them to understand. And some of the cultural things that we take for granted in America, it's a free-for-all. We can say and do anything we want as far as delivering presentations. But if you're in a foreign country where they have, for example, religious norms, you're not allowed to say certain words. You're not allowed to use the word God. You're not allowed to talk about politics. So we have to train the people who are going. And of course, the people that we work with, the very high-level CEOs and things, they know all this instinctively anyway, and they've done it for many, many years. But now that you've got a younger generation coming up, especially people who are experts on social media, for example, they have to be reined in a little bit to help them to understand how you speak in social media is not necessarily the way you would speak in person, because you may have members of a royal family in the audience, for example, in certain countries. So it's really having an awareness of your surroundings and your environment and being respectful.
Yeah, you can't take offense when you go to Australia and they call you a bloke. It's not a swear word. All right, ladies and gentlemen, she's written an incredible book, and it's basically the CEO's secret weapon, how great leaders and their assistants maximize productivity and their effectiveness. Before we get to the details of the book, though, how did you, what's the catalyst for the book, if you will?
So I tell you, Sam, you know, I have extensive background being an executive assistant. I've worked for some well-known people. I guess the best known person I've worked for is Tony Robbins, the business and life strategist and author. Everybody knows Tony. And I've had a few other executives who are very well-known in the business world who I've worked for. And when I started my business, one of the things that I noticed, Sam, was that a lot of these famous business experts who were going around the world telling everybody how to run their businesses, they had really lousy assistants, many of them. And I thought, how can this be that this person is so exceptional in business, is famous all over the world, and yet they can't even hire an effective assistant? And so it started to bother me quite a lot, and I thought, you know, it's really time for me to share what I know and help executives to understand the need for having a high-quality executive assistant, because this person is your face and voice to the world. They're your ambassador. They're your deputy. And people judge you by the caliber of your assistant. I know certainly, I give examples in the book of very famous people who I had a lot of respect for, and then one day I get their assistant on the phone, and I just shake my head and go, how is this person working with somebody like this? They're an encumbrance more than a help to the executive. So I decided to write the book, and fortunately a publisher came along, Paul Griff Macmillan, who said, yes, absolutely, we'll publish it. And I have to tell you, my very good friend and a fellow speaker, Chester Elton, who has written several books on the New York Times bestseller list, he, in fact, was the person who introduced me to his publisher, and that's how I actually came to be published, because otherwise, if it wasn't for Chester, I would have just self-published my book.
All right, so we've kind of talked about your growing up in India and Australia and coming to the United States. We've talked about what you're doing now, but really the middle gap, if you will, that kind of preceded the book as well, is you were an executive assistant for quite some time, right?
Oh, yes, 20-plus years I was, yes.
And that kind of lets you have a little bit of experience on the subject. They say write about something you know, right?
Well, absolutely. And my book essentially gives an insider look to executives and to assistants. You know, it helps executives to understand the caliber of assistant that they need, what are the characteristics to look for, how to go through the interview process once you've decided to hire this person, how you bring them on board, and then how you develop the relationship for the future so you have some longevity in the relationship. And then for assistants, it helps them to understand what it's going to take for them to start delivering on next-level performance if, in fact, they want to be. You know, there's this word that they use now, the phrase to describe assistants. They want to call themselves business partners. And if you're going to be a business partner, you're going to have to start acting like a business partner. You have to stop thinking like a secretary or like an assistant, not that there's anything derogatory in the term assistant. I was an executive assistant for 20-something years. I know the caliber and the level that executives expect. But they want to take the title up a notch in order to convey what they do. So if that's what you want to do, then you're also going to have to bring the level of your performance up as well. And I've had tremendous success from both executives and assistants who've read the book, who tell me what a tremendous impact it's had on their lives and their perspective on the role of the executive assistant.
I'm kind of like a redneck, Jan. I'm going to compare it to basketball a little bit. You know, they always document the assist. John Stockton, a well-known jazz basketball player for quite some time, was well-known for the assist. And I would submit to you that all great scorers in the basketball game have assists that occur, or they don't score. And the person that usually commits the assist oftentimes is somebody who smartly steps back and nails a three-pointer when they don't give an assist. Mm-hmm. And so their role becomes very valuable as an executive assistant to say, number one, I want you to create the great assist, the assists of all time. But in the times when there's not an assist to be made for various reasons, I want you to step back and nail the three-pointer too. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. In fact, that's the analogy that my husband has used many times when I was talking to him about my book. And also when I talked to him about the role of the assistant, that's exactly how he describes it. So, you know, you have to... What's happening right now is that with the computer and with the internet, a lot of younger executives think they don't need an assistant. The problem with that is that they are wasting a lot of valuable time because there are so many other things that they should be doing as executives, implementing the business strategy, you know, creating revenue for the organization, as opposed to sitting at a computer and setting up your own appointments or saving, you know, some money on an airfare or something like that. So they have to understand the wider role of what the assistant can do to in fact lay the groundwork so that the executive then can do what it is that they do best.
The point here, ladies and gentlemen, is this. Learn to delegate. I should say that like 50 times. Learn to delegate, ladies and gentlemen, to executives. If you don't appreciate the value of a top-notch assistant, you're absolutely missing out. Okay? This is something seriously to understand. Jan Jones with us, ladies and gentlemen. Her website, theceosecretweapon.com. That's the name of her website and her book, The CEO's Secret Weapon. Executives, I also want to ask you a question. Ready? Do Donald Trump's assistants make him a great leader? Jan Jones, we'll talk about that too coming up in seconds. You are listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump signing an executive order yesterday that he says will change police policy nationwide when it comes to the use of force. And now in just a few hours, U.S. Senate Republicans will be holding a news conference to introduce a bill that's designed to reform policing as well. And South Carolina's Tim Scott, the Senate's only black Republican, is leading the party's charge to reform policing after a series of events, including the death of George Floyd while in the custody of Minneapolis police back on Memorial Day. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany says when it comes to winning the nation's battle against coronavirus, the nation is winning. In an interview yesterday with Fox News, she says,
our position is that we're monitoring it. We can't predict the future, but we think we're at a place where we have this under control and we'll keep it under control.
This is USA Radio News.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I've had a lot of really great days back-to-back, which has been a huge blessing. Even my doctor told me, because they asked me to bring everything in that I take on a daily basis, he was very encouraged by seeing what I was taking, and he said he didn't care how many I had. And he said it's food. And the form that it's in was something that he was very, because he's an avid learner, and he's always researching, and he's always excited to see new things. And he told me, this would be good. This will help you immensely with the nutrition that you need.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Start your journey to better health today by calling 1-800-246-8751 or by going to balanceofnature.com. And make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
President Trump today is set to announce a new program that he says will be aimed at preventing suicides by Americans, especially by veterans. The effort is called PREVENTS. It's short for the President's Roadmap to Empower Veterans and End a National Tragedy of Suicide. The VA says the aim is to develop a holistic public health approach to suicide prevention and trying to change a culture surrounding mental health and suicide prevention as it currently exists. The Trump administration is hoping to keep former National Security Advisor John Bolton's new memoir off the shelves. The administration asking a federal judge to stop the publication of The Room Where It Happened and also to dispose of any copies that have already been sent out. The department seeking an order to require Bolton to complete a pre-publication review process to make sure there's nothing in the book that's classified. This is USA Radio News.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Jan Jones with us. She's an author. She's a speaker. She's been an executive assistant for a long time. TheCEOsSecret.com is her website and the name of her award-winning book, How Great Leaders and Their Assistants Maximize Productivity and Effectiveness. And I want to bring up Donald Trump, not because I want to go political, folks. We do plenty of politics on this show, but sometimes you got to switch gears into more important subjects, right? Do Donald Trump's assistants make him a great leader, writes Jan Jones. A great question, and I really think one of the things people don't understand, they don't want to talk about Trump because they say it's too political, too divisive, too whatever. Stop. Look, the guy's a great businessman. Him and his father have been so forever. His sons are no less stellar in their abilities as well. They've created a family legacy, to say the least. It hasn't happened without just cause. In other words, the hard work behind the scenes really is one of the keys to their success. But is it all them? Or is it the people that are around them, that support them, that provide the, quote, assist, if you will? And Jan, I think that everybody ought to be willing to look at him as a businessman and take out the politics for a second and say, what makes that thing tick, right?
Well, you know, this is so interesting because I interviewed Mr. Trump from my book before he became president, right? So,
sure.
And I have a quote from him on the cover of my book, which is just absolutely, in a nutshell, he says, assistants save time and time is money. That's as clear as it can get. And it's absolutely crisp and to the point, and that's why I have it on the cover of my book. And what's interesting is, pardon me, Sam, what's interesting is that people who are reading the book now will call me up and they'll say, well, you know, when are you going to reprint the book? Because I don't want to read a book that has Trump on it or has Trump in it. And I say to them, look, we're not going to reprint this book to make you politically happy. This is a man that is speaking to you as a business owner, a highly successful business owner. And as I say in the book, he has the very best assistant.
Well, and you know what? He's the model at learning how to hire people who make him great, though. And he literally acknowledges these people oftentimes. I mean, he's a perfect study in success here. He not only, one, hires the right people and understands, but then he literally gives the credit to many of them. And he acknowledges that, you know what? I'm just so dang good at hiring people who know more than me about something. I mean, he's made that point many times, and it can't be lost on an educated public, can it?
Yeah, and he says, you know, that he has very good instincts that he relies on. But as he says, I believe every hire is a gamble. You know, sometimes people work, sometimes people don't work. And even his assistant Norma, he said, you know, that he knew that because she came with a lot of international experience, and she was elegant, and she was also tough, and she wasn't somebody who you could fool, so people couldn't get around her. So the thing about Trump is that he knows what it takes, and he knew what he needed. And this is what I tell executives all the time. When you're attempting to hire an assistant, you better ask yourself the questions, what it is that I need? What do you need in this person? What kind of help do you need? What kind of personality is going to fit with you? And this is what's so important to understand. And he also said that, you know, he knew she could handle anything that came along, so that when they moved into Trump Tower, and then when The Apprentice came, the show came on the scene, everything ramped up, and she was totally prepared to handle it. So, you know, this is the kind of person that you need behind somebody who is a strong business leader. And he said, you know, I needed someone strong because he works quickly and he's demanding and he needs a straight shooter. So she was all of these things. So it really helps for you to know who you are and what you need if you're going to hire the correct assistant who is a good match for you.
Well, he's got Hope Hicks in the past, and now he's got a McEnany. Right now that are doing a phenomenal job defending the press factor now as well. Just doing a great job. And again, whether you like or don't like Donald Trump, that's beside the point. The point here, ladies and gentlemen, is he is a case study in learning how to pick those around him who make him great. And no doubt he's talented himself. Don't misunderstand my point. But part of the talent, part of the rock star status has to do with picking the right people around you.
Yes.
Jan?
And you'll see this throughout the Trump organization. I'll tell you, Sam, because I do a lot of work with Don Jr. We send him to speak all over the world, and every place we send him, people want to bring him back because he makes such a tremendous impression as a professional. And everybody that I have any cause to work with in the Trump organization, they are absolutely exemplars of professionalism, of civility, of being the top at what they do. Every time I have a phone call with somebody from the Trump organization, I come away thinking, my God, these people are the consummate professionals.
Well, and you look at the First Lady Melania. She's got this mm-hmm. Be Best campaign that I really would love to talk to her about. I commend her for it. And, you know, they attack her and say, well, look at your husband. And she responds in kind fashion and just says, you know what, we're doing the best we can and we're trying to help everybody be the best they can. And let's be kind and gentle and patient and dignified. And in my opinion, she herself has set a standard. And sadly, she's been under attack by so many people for all the wrong reasons, in my personal opinion, unfair as all get out. But she's been a hero in terms of her willingness just to shrug it off and stand tall for the principles that matter most.
She is absolutely elegance personified. And, you know, the way she presents herself, the way she conducts herself, she is a fantastic first lady for us. People from all over the world tell me, in fact, they say to me sometimes, how does somebody so elegant match with someone like Donald Trump? But obviously there's a chemistry over there that works for them.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you why really quick, because Donald, in the rough and tumble of the world, has a pretty hard exterior, and he gets it done, no doubt. He's willing to punch back harder and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? We see President Trump, even on the campaign trail. Ben Carson was going to go on the stage with him before when they were running for presidential candidates, so they weren't even together at that point. Ben didn't work for President Trump, if you will. And Ben was confused on when he was supposed to go out or whatever. And behind the scenes, President Trump, at the time candidate Donald Trump, just basically, you know, grabbed Ben and they walked out together. And he turned a big old snafu for Ben into a kind of a casual, cool moment And it just, Ben speaks about this, by the way. Mr. Carson speaks about this and highlights how Trump is different. When you get him alone or in a meeting or in a private setting, Trump is the he's as gracious as his wife. A very interesting statement, if you ask me.
Gracious and generous and willing to help. Look, I got Donald Trump to interview for my book. This man is so incredibly busy. And he took the time to do it. Why? Because he wanted to showcase his assistant. He knew the value she brought. He respected her. And he answered my questions. If I had further questions, I asked them again. He gave me further information on that. I mean, he never said, look, I'm too busy. No, thank you. He just said, absolutely, yes, I will do this. And he was so incredibly generous to me. So fortunately, I get to see a different side of Mr. Trump. When I met him, it's so interesting. I met him to ask him if he would come and do a speaking engagement for us, for one of my clients in Australia. And again, as busy as he was, he took time to stop and talk to me and say, who are you? Who is the client? What are they looking for? And then he turned me over to Norma, and that's how I got to work with her. So this is somebody who is very gracious and certainly in business, the consummate professional as well. People may not like his public persona and his style, but behind that, there is an absolute, as I say, consummate business person.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Jan Jones is the author. The book is The CEO's Secret Weapon. The website is theceosecretweapon.com. And we're talking about how great leaders and their assistants maximize productivity and effectiveness. Now, as you wrote the book, and as you've been an executive assistant for, you know, a long time, when you wrote the book, did anything shock you about the value of an executive assistant that maybe you didn't even know?
When you say shock me, you mean in terms of what they contribute?
Yeah, just that you know what, you know how valuable they are, so you write the book. But as you do so, you discover and learn more about their traits and the value they bring to the table that maybe even you went, wow, I knew they were important, but not that important. My goodness. Is it that kind of a deal?
I can't say it that way because I've always known, and that's what actually led me to write the book. And the book is written from my perspective and my experience. So yes, I've always known that. What shocked me was the number of executives who didn't know this. If anything,
oh, okay.
I mean, that was it. And this is why, as I was interviewing executives, some people who were of different generations, it became very, very clear to me how vital it was for me to actually write this book and help executives to understand. In fact, I've had CEOs who call me up out of the blue or send me an email saying, I just read your book and I want to thank you. You've saved me about 10 years of time in looking for an assistant and knowing what to work with and the value that an assistant brings. So that was the thing that shocked me more than anything. It was not the value the assistant brought, but the fact that executives, in fact, didn't know the value that assistants brought.
What shocks me a little bit in studying the topic is not only how valuable they are, but what shocks me a little bit is how valuable they can be if they only know it. What I mean is, if they think of themselves as, I'm just an assistant, I'm not really important, then that's what they'll be. On the other hand, if they realize, you know what, I not only can magnify the CEO that I work for, but I can magnify myself in the process and provide tremendous value. Those are the ones, in my opinion, that become the secret weapon.
Yes, and what's interesting is that a lot of assistants actually do know the value that they bring, and they do know that the contribution that they make. The difficulty for them is getting that message out to executives and helping them to understand that there's so much more that the assistant can do than they are being delegated to or permitted to do.
Can you stay two more minutes?
Of course.
Hang tight. Liberty Roundtable Live.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems at all times and in all places is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
All right, Jan Jones with us, ladies and gentlemen. She wrote an incredible book. Okay, she asks the question and interviews Donald Trump for her book. Do Donald Trump's assistants make him a great leader? The answer is yes, they do. He understands the value of an executive assistant like no other. She's an author, speaker, businesswoman. TheCEOsSecretWeapon.com is the website, The CEO's Secret Weapon. And that's the name of her book as well. We know you got to fly here in just a second, Jan, but I wanted to ask you one more question about executive assistants. So what about this? The executive assistants that know their value, but yet they work for a CEO that doesn't know their value. Can an executive assistant teach that or make that so evident that it's obvious, or do they got to go work for somebody else?
No. So I tell this to assistants all the time because assistants say, my boss won't let me. And I say to them, nobody's going to let you. You have to show them. You have to jump in there and you have to take charge. And when they see what you're doing, they're going to all of a sudden have this realization, my gosh, you know, I should be turning more over to this person. Or they will just maybe even just quietly let you take charge more and more. And this is the thing about assistants is that, you know, you had talked to me about Jocko's book, The Extreme Leadership, where they talk about great leaders, they take absolute ownership. And this is, when you said that, I thought, my God, this is exactly what it is that top executive assistants do. They take ownership. They take absolute ownership. If things aren't getting done, they'll jump in and take care of it. They don't say, that's not my job. Oh, I shouldn't be having to do this. They take care of it because they're looking out for the success of the overall operation and the overall organization. So this is absolutely something where extreme ownership is something that executive assistants get to show their value and their worth, that they will step up and then they will do what needs to be done. And I'll tell you, a large part of the assistant's role, actually, the assistant, half the time, executives don't even know what their assistants do because it's not in a formal job description. But assistants know what they have to do, and they just jump in and take charge. So it's not a question of, when people say to me, they don't let me, I immediately say, then they're not the caliber of the assistant that is the absolute top level, because that level of assistant, they don't wait around to be asked. They don't wait around to be told. They see what needs to be done, and they take charge. They do it.
Executives, if you don't know and appreciate the value of a top-notch assistant, you're missing out. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to be effective? You want to have productivity? TheCEOsSecretWeapon.com. Jan Jones, thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Been my pleasure, Sam. Thank you so much.
She does a phenomenal job, Kurt, and this is really where people in America can shine. America can be a light on a hill to really set an example around the world about the value of executive assistants. And everybody has one. Everybody needs one. When you say everybody has one, you say, Sam, that's not true. Oh, I think it is. I think everybody has somebody around them that supports them and assists them, right? Every kid has a mom, right? Moms are the executive assistants to kids, right? They get them everywhere. They do everything, and their lives just go so smooth, they don't even realize what's being done for them. That's some of the value. Kurt, any thoughts?
You know, when it comes to the president, and I agree with what you've said, Sam, and what the good guest brought forward, and when I look at these presidential press conferences and these different things where the president's there, maybe the day of prayer or the different events like the one about prayer in school that he held and these different ones, it's almost that his gratitude for so many people, I mean, he's just constantly thanking people and, you know, great work. We sure appreciate your efforts there and all that kind of stuff. It's, I mean, it's not hard to see from the president. And I think that's one of the reasons he has been successful is he's surrounded by great people and they get recognition.
There's no question about it, Kurt. And I want to make another point about this, too, that executive assistants, I believe the name is kind of a misnomer. It makes it sound like, you know, there's the important guy and then there's the assistant or the, you know, I don't know that that name does the job or the delegated responsibilities and or the extreme ownership of responsibilities. I don't know that it does it justice by the name. Secretary is not a good name. Assistant's not necessarily a great name because I don't think that it properly conveys the real or the reality here, Kurt. And I think this is important to highlight. You know what? Let's just say on this program, what would I be? I'd be the CEO, Kurt would be the executive assistant. I don't know that I have more value than Kurt, per se. Kurt brings up probably over half the stories we talk about. He does the research behind the scenes. He's out in the field. He helps book guests. He does so many things for this program that I don't know that I can say assistant. I kind of choose the term co-host on the radio that makes sense. But my point is I don't know that the assistant term does what's really being done justice either. So I would say Kurt's the secret weapon in many ways on this broadcast that, you know what, doesn't get the credit. It reminds me on a football team. The quarterback gets all the credit, but you know what? The quarterback would be sacked and lose the ball every time if it wasn't for, what are they called, executive assistants, Kurt? Those blockers up front taking care of business, right? And I think it's an important thing to understand. I think all great leaders have people around them that make them great, and they learn how to build teams for success. They learn how to have extreme ownership of things that they're responsible for. They learn how to serve. They know when to lead. They know when to follow. They know when to work together. They know when to push. They know when to back off. They know when to, and it's a gut feeling most of the time that gets you there. It's a huge dose in humility to get there, but it can be done, and you see it in top-tier organizations everywhere. All right. Anyway, I thought that was a fun topic that in a way is separate from politics, but in a way strikes at the very heart of politics, Kurt. We can be that executive assistant to all great leaders that make America great again. We don't have to just complain and run around and say, oh man, everything's horrible. We can basically work hard ourselves and do what we know needs to be done. And if enough of us do that, we can make a difference. For example, we can speak out while Nancy Pelosi is silent, Kurt.
Great point, Sam. Yep, that's exactly right. She's silent on her own father, who oversaw dedication of a Confederate statue. So, you know, I mean,
wait a minute.
Wouldn't want to bring that
up. You're telling me that Nancy Pelosi's dad oversaw the dedication of a Confederate statue, Kurt, or Confederate monument there?
That's exactly right.
Well, what's wrong with that, though? I actually commend her father for that. Maybe she ought to take a page out of his playbook. It isn't about racism, folks. It's about the history of America and those people who believed in home and family and hearth. And okay, you might have disagreed with them on some things, but let's not let that become a revisionist history reality. Let's not let that become part of the cancel culture. Let's speak out about her father and say he might have been right on some things. He might have been wrong on some things. Let's celebrate that which he was right on, and let's realize that we never want to repeat anything that he may have been wrong on. And shouldn't we do that for everybody, Kurt?
Good point. Yeah, she's called now for the removal of 11 Confederate statues in the Capitol.
And, I bet her father wouldn't be proud of her, Kurt.
Yeah, good point. And yet there's no talk about the her father's role in the dedication of memorials dedicated to Confederate figures. Her father, Thomas D. Alessandro Jr., oversaw the dedication of a monument to Confederate General Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee when he was Baltimore's mayor in 1948, saying at the time that people should be inspired by the two generals and should try to emulate Jackson's example and stand like a stone wall against aggression in any form that would seek to destroy the liberty of the world.
Whoa, wait. Think about that, Nancy. Say that last phrase again.
Well, it says her father said this when he was dedicating the monument to Confederate General Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee. He says people should be inspired by the two generals and should try to emulate Jackson's example and stand like a stone wall against aggression in any form that would seek to destroy the liberty of the world.
And your aggression in the form that you choose, Nancy Pelosi, your father would be disappointed in. And we pray that you pay attention to your father's wisdom. And we concur with those views. And that doesn't mean we allow or support slavery in any way. We abhor it. But we will take the good from all people everywhere, and we'll stand with it. All right, Satanists.
By the way, they removed the statues in 2017 in Baltimore, the one that he dedicated, just so you know. So that one's gone anyway. But
sad tale, if you ask my opinion, Kurt.
Yeah.
All right, history Satanists gone. Are in the news, Kurt.
Well, that's right, Sam.
Are you with these guys?
Looking to see where that one is. Is that one on the...
Same storyline, same day, same everything. Court dismisses Satanist challenge to the abortion laws, ladies and gentlemen.
The first part. Okay, yeah, got it.
Yeah.
So the court and the Satanists,
it's hard to know how to feel about this one, isn't it, Kurt? It's like, what?
Yeah, you know, what you've got here, it's a federal appeals court that is basically dismissing a challenge to a Missouri abortion law. And the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit dismissed a lawsuit filed by a member of the Satanic Temple against the Missouri abortion law. Judy Doe, she's a member of the Satanic Temple, alleged that the informed consent requirement violates her Satanist beliefs, as well as the Establishment and Free Exercise Clauses of the First Amendment. She filed her complaint in the U.S. District, tells you where it was. She says, under Missouri law, every woman seeking an abortion is required to receive a state-authored informed consent booklet before she has an abortion. Missouri's informed consent law requires that a woman seeking an abortion certifies that she has received medically accurate information in her decision. Before a woman can have an abortion, she's required to certify in writing that she has had a chance to review an ultrasound at least 24 hours ahead of time. And this lady was, stated that her body is inviolable and she alone decides what to do with the human tissue inside of her body. You know, she was ticked off about that. So at least I'm glad that the court actually did this. You know what I mean, Sam?
Wow.
Somehow saving babies a little bit.
Yeah. We'll take anything we can get, ladies and gentlemen, on this front. I'll tell you that now, because wow.
Yes, sir.
Do we got a row to hoe? Hungary on the other side of the coin, doing a good job, Kurt. Kind of.
Well, that's right.
Not really for the government being involved in this, but hey, at least it's pro-family, right?
Well, yeah, the headline reads, Hungary sees 5.5% birth rate increase after enacting pro-family policies. I mean, those people are realizing that if they don't have children, Sam, pretty soon, they don't have a country.
Yeah, no taxes.
No, you know,
aren't children tax-friendly, Kurt? Because they grow up and become taxpayers and stuff.
Taxpayers, like that. Yeah, good point.
All right, just kind of bringing that out, ladies and gentlemen. You know me. All right, thanks for being alongside for the ride. Hopefully it was educational and entertaining. Hard-hitting talk always at your fingertips. 6 days a week, 2 hours a day on the Sabbath day we rest. Otherwise, you can watch us tweet and post Facebook messages throughout the day and more. Share the word. Spread the love, will you please? LibertyRoundtable.com. LovingLiberty.net. Download their iPhone and Android apps today and listen to your heart's content. It's free, and spread the word. LovingLiberty.net. For Sam and Kurt, we declare, we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore our grand old republic. Please get involved, make it a great day, and choose the right. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.